Physics World.
Hello, and welcome to the Physics World Weekly Podcast. I'm Hamish Johnston. Artificial intelligence seems to be everywhere these days, and science is no exception. But how can physicists best use the rapidly changing technology? And how can they be confident in the results AI delivers? To find out, Physics World's Catherine Skipper spoke to the co-founder of an international consortium that's developing AI tools for scientists.
In 2022, Google's DeepMind group announced that the AlphaFold artificial intelligence program had cracked one of the thorniest problems in biology, how to predict the structure of a protein from the amino acid chain. AI is already changing the way we do science. It could open up new possibilities in everything from particle physics to drug discovery. But what's the best way to use AI in research? How should scientists share knowledge and resources? And what responsibilities do scientists have when using artificial intelligence? To talk about this, I'm joined by Rick Stevens, who is the Associate Laboratory Director for Computing, Environment and Life Sciences at the Argonne Laboratory in the US. He's also a professor of computer science at the University of Chicago. Rick is one of the founders of the Trillion Parameter Consortium. Launched in November 2023, it's an initiative to bring together researchers from all over the world to coordinate the development of AI tools for science. Those involved include scientists at the SDFC Rutherford Appleton Laboratory in the UK, and the founders span academia, industry, and research institutes. Rick, thank you for joining me.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So firstly, the number 1 trillion is something that I see a lot when people talk about AI. Can you explain what the significance of that number is and what trillion parameters means?
Well, it's a big number. It means a million, 10 to the 12th. The reason it comes up in AI research is it's a number that kind of characterizes the scale of current frontier level AI systems. So you hear about systems like ChatGPT-4 or Claude 3 or Gemini Ultra and so on. These models are expected. I mean, a lot of the details are not public, but from what we know, these models are in the trillion parameter regime, meaning that they have 10 to the 12th weights or variables that were trained, adjusted during training, to represent the knowledge that the model contains, the knowledge and the skills that the model contains. So that's a scale that's quite interesting. Very commonly available models, open models, tend to be more in the 10 billion parameter range. So maybe a factor of 100 smaller than these state-of-the-art models. And a trillion parameters is a very challenging model to actually create and to train. So for example, if you wanted to train a large language model with a trillion parameters, it's likely to take on the order of many months on a machine that can do over an exaflop worth of computing per second. So maybe 2 or 3, 4 months. And so it's a very large computation. So it kind of represents the frontier of accessible AI. Most academic groups, I would say, do not have the ability to create models that large. They don't have enough computing resources to train them. And to train a model that has on the order of, say, a trillion parameters, you would want to have something like 20 trillion tokens of data. So that is a huge amount of data. We can talk about what that means. But so these are large, the very largest models and the very largest collections of data to train them.
Right. So now onto the consortium. How and why was it founded, and what are the aims of the project?
So in the last year or so, there's been an increasing interest in the scientific community to think about building large AI models, generative AI models, whether they're language models for scientific text or whether they're models that might operate in biological sequence space or weather field space or something like that, to build such models for scientific purposes and to push the scale. Because what we know when you're building AI systems, that scale matters. Scale is one of the magic elements that makes AI happen. We can build small models, and when we scale them up, they behave qualitatively differently than the small models. And so scale is a big factor in imagining models for scientific purposes that would have considerable more capabilities than the current models that we have. Anyway, there's a lot of people thinking about this. And unlike the handful of very large companies that have the resources to train such models internally, a lot of our colleagues were interested in working together on arranging collaborations in a way that we could either work together on creating data sets to train such models, work on sharing knowledge around how to build such models, and to some degree, work on sharing access to computers. Now, the research community does have access to large computers, like the exascale system that we're building at Argonne and similar systems, say, at Oak Ridge and at other laboratories around the world, like our colleagues in Japan and so on. But these machines are heavily subscribed, and for the academic community to get, say, a large allocation of time on a academic kind of supercomputer to use for training AI, there would probably need to be many groups agreeing to work together on that in order to make it worthwhile to allocate that time. So the Trillion Parameter Consortium is really an organization to try to cross-fertilize all of these issues. You know, how do we build the data sets? How do we architect the models? How do we work together on acquiring access? How do we evaluate the models when we build them? How do we ensure that they're safe? And how do we even understand the avenues of progress in this space?
Right. And so talking a bit more specifically about physics, and you spoke about how much of a difference the scale of that you're able to access makes. What kinds of problems in physics are people thinking about when it comes to AI? And yeah, how much of a difference does it make having access to, say, a trillion parameter model versus the computing power for a couple of billion parameters?
Well, one of the key ideas in generative AI for science is this concept of foundation models. So a model that's trained broadly on data from many problems, many sources, many domains. In physics, there's an effort to think about this or to build a model along these lines for high-energy physics that imagines training a single foundation model on hundreds of experiments worth of data from many different instruments, many different accelerator and detector systems, and then use that model for many downstream tasks, for identifying particles, for identifying trajectories, and so forth. So this idea of a single kind of super model that is trained very broadly and then could be adapted for dozens of downstream tasks is this concept of like a foundation model. And the different disciplines are making plans to build foundation models for their domain. So you could imagine a model like that being built in, say, high-energy physics. You could also imagine a model like that maybe being built in cosmology or in astrophysics for to be useful in a range of problems in that domain. We know of people building them for materials science, for example. Same idea. So a single model that's trained on thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of material samples, crystal structures, physical measurements, crystallography data, and so forth. And then that model would be able to make predictions in many different targeted application areas. So that's the concept. So that's what we call the concept of these domain foundation models. So that's one idea that the Trillion Parameter Consortium members are working on. There's other approaches where you want to integrate data from many domains into a single model. So think of it like you're trying to build a model that's kind of a polymath, right? That knows deeply, it knows applied mathematics, it knows physics, it knows biology, it knows chemistry, it knows material science, it knows climate, and so on. And the idea of that kind of a model that goes beyond to say a single kind of physics domain is to be able to integrate and synthesize knowledge in a multidisciplinary fashion. So to bring patterns and structures that might occur in physics to biology, or from biology into some other, from say biomedicine into say synthetic biology or something like that. So this idea of models that are interdisciplinary is also very powerful. And of course, the large general purpose language models that we have access to, publicly accessible models, tend to be in that second category. They're broadly trained on many domains. So ChatGPT-4 is a pretty good in physics, and it's pretty good in biology, and it's pretty good in chemistry. And so it's an example of a model where you could expect it, maybe future versions, to be able to integrate concepts across domains. So I see two different kind of directions. And then we see kind of a third idea emerging where you mix these concepts. So maybe a model that's very general purpose, that's interdisciplinary, it knows the language of many parts of science, coupled to a collection of domain-specific foundation models. So it knows, say, that the high-energy physics model knows how to do certain things, and the material science model knows how to do certain things. And depending on what you're asking the system to do, it will vector those requests to the individual expert components. So all of that, we think, is possible. The consortium itself isn't really trying to advocate any particular way of doing this. It's really just trying to bring the community together that have common interests and promote best practices, and also raise awareness that there's huge opportunity for AI in science, and it's going to represent a direction that will be incredibly fruitful over the next 10, 15 years, but it's also going to be very resource intensive. And part of the consortium's goal is to help educate funding agencies and governments around the opportunity and the need to invest in at scale.
I guess, as well as the fact that AI can be used to solve specific problems, when I think about the use of AI in science, I think about I've just done a PhD, and I think about how I feel about the thought of doing research without the internet, which is not a long time ago at all, but it feels unimaginable to have done research where you have to print out every paper that you use, and where you don't have instant access to all your data, and you can't video call with collaborators, and you can't use Google to ask questions. So as well as like specific uses of artificial intelligence, how do you think AI will change just the day-to-day way that the research is done?
Well, that's a good question, because we're already starting to see it happen, where instead of using Google, say, to find a paper, depending on the AI you're using, you might be able to ask it to build you a bibliography on a topic. And it can go out and find the papers, it can read and summarize the papers, it can select the papers that are most relevant to your question and build you a bibliography. And, oh, by the way, download the papers for you if you want to go deeper. So this idea of using AI to accelerate what we already do is one way to use it. Another way to use it that we're working on in some of our own work is having a system read, say, 50,000 papers and extract information from those papers and integrate that information to extract, say, hypotheses from tens of thousands of papers, analyze those hypotheses and try to find what's common and what's different between them, try to identify, say, experiments that might answer more than one hypothesis or address the questions in one or more hypotheses. That's something that would be almost impossible to do without AI. I mean, as individuals, in your lifetime, you might read 20, 30,000 papers. But the idea that in a weekend, a system could analyze, say, 10,000 papers and say, here's the 30 hypotheses that are most important in this field. By the way, here's the 20 experiments that would inform, progress. You could do that in a weekend. Now, of course, you have to do the experiments, maybe. But this kind of acceleration and integration across all of knowledge becomes possible. So in the literature, I think this becomes quite doable. Now, a lot of scientific data, though, is not yet available to AI. So one of the challenges that we have is there's petabytes and exabytes of scientific data that are not in papers, right? The raw data from experiments or the biological databases that underpin genomics and so forth. And one of the challenges that we're addressing in the Trillion Parameter Consortium is how do we expose that data in a way that AI can have access to it? So we see lots of different ways in which AI will accelerate and support science. I mean, one way to think about it is imagine the little AI assistant that helps you, that you have access to 24/7, and it can run experiments, it can read literature, it can summarize, it can maybe talk to your colleagues' AIs about what they're up to, and every morning gives you a little progress report on, I talk to these AIs, your colleagues, and here's the new idea to think about today, or we made progress on these problems you gave me from last week. That we think is possible. It'll require a lot more computing and more powerful AI capabilities than we have today, but we see inklings of that emerging.
Right. And actually something that I also thought about as you were talking about using data and the sheer volume of data that we have, something that's been a topic of discussion in physics but I know in other areas of science is the issue of reproducibility. And I guess how good the massive volume of data we have is. Do you think that's something that's going to get more important as we're training AI models?
Well, I think it's important to train models on data that are self-consistent and correct. A lot of data, particularly in fields that are benchtop level science, there's a lot of variability in the quality of data. There's two ways to think about this. One is how AI might be able to sort out the good data from the bad data and try to help you make choices in terms of what data to consider in your questions. But another direction is for the AI actually to run experiments, right? So we're quite interested in this idea of autonomous discovery, or what some people call self-driving labs, where the AI is actually taking the problem from the scientists, typically, and translating that into protocols, and then translating that into, say, operations for the robots and carrying out the experiments, aggregating the resulting data, analyzing the data, maybe suggesting more experiments and so on. But the more we automate, say, laboratory level science, the more repeatable, the more reproducible that science will be, because we're kind of factoring out the human element. Now, there's still going to be other reasons for variability, weather, air pressure, humidity, things that kind of vary from day to day that also inject noise. But this idea of moving from humans being the mechanism for doing experiments to, say, automation, robotics, and humans maybe more focusing on the broad set of questions and the relationships that you're trying to establish could improve reproducibility. But a lot of parts of science, there's still a lot of uncertainty in how we do things, right? So in biology in particular, experiments can be challenging, particularly quantitative experiments. And AI may be able to help a little bit with that, but what really holds us back is the fact that we still have a large amount of lack of understanding in certain systems. And so these systems might be noisy and they might be very complex. And so we have to attack all of it, but I think AI will help on almost all those dimensions.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought that you might be able to, I guess, automate a lot of the stuff that PhD students are sort of doing now that might not be the most sort of fun or intellectually stimulating parts of their work. I remember I spent a lot of long evenings in the basement of the lab, running experiments. It would have been quite nice if I could have gotten a robot to do that. So we've talked about, again, the potential of artificial intelligence to solve, problems in science. But I guess another side of that is that it's an incredibly powerful tool, and an incredibly energy intensive tool, and it comes with, responsibilities. So what kind of responsibilities do you think researchers have when using and developing AI, and how is the consortium working on that?
So there's a couple key responsibilities. One is that as scientists and as creators of new technology, we want to make sure that we don't create things that are intrinsically dangerous or will be used for bad purposes. So this idea of AI safety is very important. If you're building models that deeply understand, say, molecular biology or infectious disease, they could be used to great cures for diseases, but they also could be used perhaps for engineering pathogens. And so how to safeguard against the bad use cases, I think, is a major challenge. And I think we have some notions of how to do that, but we still need a lot more research in how to do that. Another one is this idea of, you know, in science, we need things to be reliable, truthful, to be repeatable, of course. And that means that we ideally want AIs that are grounded in the world, that have put a special value on data from the real world as opposed to from some other source, right? And I think how we do that is still pretty open, right? So there's some approaches where you try to build the physics into the AI itself so that it can't violate the laws of physics or it's penalized for violating the laws of physics. But I'm more interested in the case where the model understands physics and you can negotiate with the model what physical laws or what physical principles you want it to pay attention to. And if you have a model like that, you can use it to explore alternative theories. You can use it to explore alternative physics. And I think we need to move in that direction, not just put guardrails on the model to say, be straight jacketed into some current physical notion, but to have the model actually understand when it's following known laws of physics and when it's outside of that space would be super useful. We want models to be tools in theory development, right? And to be able to compare alternative theories. And that requires much more capability than we have in current models. We need them to be really good at doing detailed calculations as well. And a lot of current language models they're getting better, but you know they can still make very simple math errors. It requires a fair amount of work to get them to be rigorous. And that's improving because there's ways of having the model talk to, say, a symbolic computing engine or a calculator write a computer program to answer something where maybe the numerics are better calculated directly than say, from the model trying to compute a completion or something on that. So, I mean, there's a special set of needs, I think, for science that distinguish AI properties from the general ones. And in the TPC, there's working groups discussing these topics and working together on them.
Right, thank you. So just finally, can you finish up by talking a bit about what the Trillion Parameter Consortium is going to be working on in the near future, in the next year or so?
Well, there's some workshops that we have planned in Europe this summer to bring people together. We're still in this stage we just came out of some meetings in Sydney a couple of weeks ago that were associated with the Supercomputing Asia Conference, where we had, 100 people in meetings, tutorials and planning sessions around data aggregation, around model development, around evaluation, these things I mentioned. So we'll have some meetings in Europe this summer that will be announced. We are currently having combinations of tutorials on generative AI for different scientific topics. So that's usually part of meetings and then working group sessions. A number of TPC members are actively training large models. So the Allen Institute for AI recently did some work, a model called OLMA. We've got a model that we're building, Aurora GPT, in my lab, but there's other models being built by other members and sharing results and sharing data associated with those models. So it's kind of all of those things are likely to continue for the next year.
Right. Thank you for coming on the podcast, Rick, and talking about your work.
That was Rick Stevens of Argonne National Lab and the University of Chicago in conversation with Catherine Skipper. Last year, I spoke with the theoretical physicist Matt Hodgson about how he was using artificial intelligence in his research and teaching at the UK's University of York. You can find that conversation in the archives of the weekly podcast. Just look for the headline, "The Chatbot Revolution: How Physicists Are Using Large Language Models in Academia." I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this week's podcast. Thanks to Rick and Catherine for a fascinating discussion. And thanks to our producer, Callum Jelf. We'll be back again next week with an episode that's dedicated to attosecond science. But in the meantime, do check out the latest episode of the Physics World Stories podcast. Host Andrew Glester explores the science, politics, and ethics of the Netflix series Three Body Problem, with the show's science advisor, a linguist, and a science writer as his guests. You can find that episode on the Physics World website or at your favorite podcast provider. Just look for the headline, Three Body Problem, a deep dive into the Netflix show.
Physics World.